Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. All sorts of industries are bracing for change as the Trump administration ends and the Biden administration begins. The electric vehicle industry is one of them, hoping that Biden follows through on promises of new rebates to buy EVs and a dramatic expansion of charging stations. To make sure that happens, EV companies, including Rivian and Tesla, have formed a new lobbying and advocacy group called the Zero Emission Transportation Association, or ZETA. ZETA's executive director, Joe Britton, tells Ryan Denham what they hope to accomplish together and couldn't by themselves.
When you're trying to, you know, get the public sector to invest in something, you really need to make a public interest case for it. And so that's really what our goal is. We're actually formed as a 501c4 public interest nonprofit. And so our goal is that every vehicle sold by 2030 is an EV. And again, for us, that's not a ZEV mandate. It's not a gas-powered car ban, but really putting in place the policies to help us get there, which is, you know, support and incentives for consumers, building the domestic manufacturing that we need, deploying charging infrastructure, and making sure that there's ubiquitous opportunities for folks to, you know, drive EVs and get to where they need to go, and, you know, and kind of assuage any range anxiety that may be out there. There's a host of benefits here that we think are a compelling message for policymakers and serving the public interest.
My understanding is the Trump administration was not especially friendly to your industry. It rejected new tax credits for EVs, proposed killing existing credits, making it easier to sell gas-powered vehicles. What is your read on the Biden administration's approach and what it's going to be?
Well, I guess what I'd start with is that I don't think this is an inherently partisan issue. I think certainly in the space of you know, kind of climate adjacent issues, this is probably the least partisan. So Lordstown Motor Company, who you guys know in your neck of the woods, you know, they were one that invited Vice President Pence for their plant opening. They actually brought the Endurance pickup to the White House. And at the second debate, Trump announced his strong support for EVs at the debate. I think in part it was because he'd taken his picture with the Endurance pickup 3 days earlier. So I think there is a, you know, kind of a breakthrough here where this, you know, sector doesn't fall into your typical partisan ruts that you might see other sectors fall into. So, you know, that being said, I think the Biden administration is going to provide us a lot of opportunities to, you know, go and precipitate this transition. And I think, you know, part of that is a environment where, you know, they're supporting emissions and performance standards that send the right market signal that transitioning to electrification is the future. Again, we can look at our, you know, friends and allies and foreign competitors and see that that's the case no matter what, but having an administration who's going to push that forward and signal to, you know, to industry that this is where we need to go, that's important. Also, you know, having support for consumer incentives. Again, we believe it should be a point of sale consumer incentive that a buyer would see, you know, it's on the hood. It's something they achieve the value of right away. In addition to some additional, you know, whether it's a, you know, a trade-in or a legacy vehicle retirement, some additional credit for turning in a, you know, older, more polluting vehicle. So we think that's important. And then, you know, he's talked about, you know, deploying 500,000 public charging infrastructure investments, 500,000 units, but additional charging infrastructure across the country. And that is a huge boost to the space.
Electric vehicle sales represent about 2%, almost 3% of all sales at this point. Is that about right?
It may be a generous assessment. It's growing though. So I'll give you the scoop on where we want to be. So we want to be at 100% EV sales by 2030. And that's across the light, medium, and heavy duty sector. We want consumers to choose this. This is not something that we're, you know, demanding as a mandated outcome, but, you know, really you need to sequence the manufacturing, the charging infrastructure, and the consumer incentives to make this possible. And we're aspirational. That's a future that we could see. And we really, you know, we believe there's a win in it, not only for the consumer, but in for but for economic development and job creation across the country. And that's something that I think that, you know, certainly after this last election that folks are pining for. I think everybody is going to be striving to tell a story that resonates with working class Americans. And I think you have to be able to show how are you going to be thinking creatively or, you know, shaping and deploying the public sector to improve people's lives. And this is a squarely an opportunity that I think that folks from both sides of the aisle can invest in and see leadership opportunity and solutions for Americans.
What is Rivian's role in all this? I understand they're a founding member of your organization. Where do they kind of fit into what you're doing?
They are. I mean, we've got a host of EV companies that are in the manufacturer space, Rivian, Lordstown, Lucid, Tesla. So, you know, they're one of our founding manufacturers. And so what they're really doing is, you know, they're helping us get the policy right. So they're helping us both developing policy that we think will accelerate this transition, but then also leveraging their relationships and sophistication to, you know, get the advocacy right and really be strategic. And so, you know, that's relationships that they have in Congress. It's working with local leaders and making sure that everybody's coordinating to, you know, tell a similar story about what opportunity is out there if we make this transition possible and we electrify the transportation sector. And so, you know, it is a unique opportunity to be on the front end of something like this. And Rivian was, you know, one of the first to stand up and say, this is, you know, something we want to be a part of.
That Zero Emission Transportation Association Executive Director Joe Britton speaking with Ryan Denham. Britton says he has pre-ordered a Rivian vehicle himself. Rivian is making its electric trucks, vans, and SUVs at its normal manufacturing plant. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan is struggling to hold on to his job as a federal bribery investigation inches closer. It's creating a potentially historic power vacuum in Springfield. Dave McKinney has more.
With good reason, a decades-old truism is now being questioned at the Illinois State House. Never bet against the Speaker. New indictments last week have brought a federal corruption probe into the Chicago Democrats' inner circle, though he himself hasn't been charged. His bid for a record-setting 19th term as Speaker is in doubt. Madigan needs backing from 60 of the 73 House Democrats to win another term. So far, the Speaker is at least 5 votes short, as 18 lawmakers have said they won't vote for him, including 9 since last week's indictments. One rival is State Representative Stephanie Kifowit, an Oswego Democrat.
I think it first needs to be established if Michael Madigan can put together the 60 votes. I don't believe he can.
But late Friday, Madigan insisted he's still in the race with what he called significant support. That's not stopping Democratic State Representative Kelly Cassidy from weighing her own run. The openly lesbian lawmaker from Chicago's North Side says she's personally heard from voters who have lost faith in Springfield and cite Madigan as the cause.
The first thing that we have to do in terms of new leadership is ensure that it's someone that can restore that faith.
If Madigan's bid falters, by some estimates, as many as 10 potential successors for Speaker could emerge from the racially and culturally diverse House Democratic Caucus. The possible scramble could usher in a Speaker who's African-American, a woman, or someone who's openly gay or lesbian, all firsts for the job. State Representative Will Davis, an African-American from Homewood and a member of Madigan's leadership team, is still supporting the Speaker for another term. But he's also publicly floating his own name as a potential successor if Madigan drops out.
There is a unique opportunity, particularly for an African-American, to ascend to the height of being the Speaker of the House of Illinois.
The Speaker still has organized labor in his corner. Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO, says Madigan's fate isn't sealed.
From being in this business for over 30 years and watching the Speaker, when it looks like that he's completely surrounded, he comes out and it's not wise to bet against the Speaker.
Between now and January, we'll decide whether Madigan somehow finds a new lease on political life or is deprived of leaving power on his own terms. This is Dave McKinney.
Open enrollment is now underway in Illinois for Affordable Care Act health insurance for new participants and anyone who might want to make changes in their current policies. It opened November 1st and continues through mid-December and takes effect January 1st. Herb Trix has more.
2021 will be the 8th year of health insurance plans under the ACA offered through the state of Illinois. And just in time for the pandemic, 3 new insurance companies have decided to offer plans in the state, joining the 5 already here.
I can consider it really great news because it gives Illinoisans more options. There's more plans this year. The rates have not gone up. There's actually a bit of a decrease this year. It's all positive. The more plans people have to choose from, you know, it gives them more ability to pick a plan that works for their family.
That's Laura Pelican, Executive Director of Get Covered Illinois from the Illinois Department of Insurance. She says together, the eight companies offer 179 plans.
The fact that there's an option for uninsured people to be able to get a health plan is huge, and the more plans that are available to people. So I think we're definitely in a good place, and that the ability for folks to find an insurance plan outside of an employer is very important.
Not all of the plans are offered everywhere. The state of Illinois is divided into 13 rating areas, and one of the main differences among the many plans is price. Would you prefer more coverage but with higher premiums, or are you willing to gamble that you won't need much health care and opt for the low premium but low coverage plans? Pelican thinks it's possible the pandemic will result in more people enrolling in the ACA health insurance marketplace.
Being that a lot of people lost their jobs and therefore their employer insurance. There's a lot more people that are searching for health coverage this year, more so than in past years. So at least in terms of numbers and people enrolling, we won't have numbers until spring.
To start, she recommends going to getcoveredillinois.gov.
On the website, in addition to the fact that they can find a local assister, you know, we use certified application counselors. Navigators is still a term that's used as well. They can type in their zip code and find somebody locally. Due to COVID, you know, it used to be that a lot of people would have in-person appointments, but now they're doing phone appointments and on-phone help. But that help is still there. They can also walk people through different plans, but Get Covered Illinois allows people to compare different plans side by side, which is really helpful because, you know, when people are navigating, it can be confusing.
This year, there are 293,000 participants in the Affordable Care Act health insurance marketplace in Illinois. And updated figures on enrollment won't be available until sometime next year. I'm Herb Trix.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Prairie Pride Coalition turns 25 this month. The nonprofit organization advocates for equality for the LGBTQ+ community in McLean County. The small group formed in 1995 to press the city of Bloomington to include gay, lesbian, and bisexual people in its human rights ordinance. Coalition President Dave Bentlin tells WGLT's Dana Vollmer their success was not instantaneous.
Both the city of Bloomington and the town of Normal initially defeated the amended ordinances in 96, I believe, was the year that happened. But we kept working as an organization after that. Got involved in some community activities, tried to increase the level of education and awareness of LGBTQ issues in the community. And so in the early 2000s, I believe 2001 and 2002, both the Normal Town Council and the Bloomington City Council readdressed the issues of the ordinances. And both of those councils amended their human rights ordinances to include gay and lesbian bisexual people, protections in jobs, in public accommodations, in a variety of different areas. So it was a prolonged effort. We knew that we had a learning curve that we had to approach and that we had to overcome. But I think that period of time gave us an opportunity to get out into the community and to raise awareness, to let people know that there is an LGBTQ community in Bloomington Normal. And I think that time allowed us an opportunity to work hard to change minds on both the Bloomington City Council and the Normal Town Council.
What do you think the impact is for communities that don't have these kinds of organizations, where there's kind of not the sense of community and an organized push to get these kinds of things enacted?
In 1995, when we first organized, it was sort of a new concept for some of our downstate communities to have community LGBTQ organizations. Up until that point, you know, a lot of us relied on the Chicago area for our networking in terms of LGBTQ activism. And at some point we realized that you know, there's a large number of us who don't live in the Chicago area. We want to live in the area where we were raised or where we went to school or where our careers are located. And that was true for a lot of people in Bloomington Normal. And I think that was the impetus to get us involved and get us started in 1995, because there was a significant LGBTQ community. And we decided that we needed to organize, and we needed to, if not have a unified voice, at least have a representative voice.
And I'm curious, just kind of anecdotally, just how far you've seen the kind of community at large come on some of these issues over time.
I think in the time when I first started working with what was then called the Advocacy Council, everybody pretty much considered Bloomington Normal to be a conservative area. And I think to a large extent that still remains. But I think that in terms of social issues, that the area has changed over the years. And I think that it's not just due to what Pray Pride Coalition does in the community, but what so many other organizations do in the community to raise awareness of these issues, whether it's LGBTQ issues, whether it's minority issues. These volunteer organizations like Pray Pride Coalition have really stepped up to fill a void, an information void. And I think that over time, organizations like ours have been able to bring a different perspective to the community, to show people that while this may in some ways still be a conservative community, it can be a community where we can all thrive to a certain extent, where we can all feel safe, and where we can work to feel included and welcomed.
You stress the idea that there remains work to be done. What do you want to do? Are there kind of short and long-term goals?
This month, we're celebrating Transgender Day of Remembrance. That day has been set aside to remember those who have died as a result of violence against transgender people. And it brings to light the fact that we still have areas of our community, people in our community, who do not feel safe. And I think that locally, the transgender community has become more organized, but I feel like they still feel as if they have to fly under the radar here in Bloomington Normal. They feel on guard a lot of times. And so I think what we need to do as an organization is to address issues like that. And we regularly work on things to bring awareness of transgender issues to Bloomington Normal. For instance, we get several requests from people who are seeking healthcare assistance in their transition process. And so we try to serve as a resource to point them in the right direction where they can get hormone replacement therapy, different services like that. So I think that that's one area where we need to work.
That's Prairie Pride Coalition President Dave Bentlin. He says another area for improvement is the education of young people. As part of Prairie Pride's 25th anniversary, the group is awarding scholarships to two high school seniors doing advocacy for the LGBTQ+ community. They're also refreshing a directory of LGBTQ-friendly businesses in Bloomington Normal. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Illinois Department of Public Health warn this Thanksgiving could become a super spreader event for COVID-19 if proper precautions aren't taken. Tim Shelley breaks the safety guidance down.
For many families, this Thanksgiving will look like no other. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends avoiding travel and only celebrating in person with people you live with to avoid potential spread of COVID-19.
There is no answer that is completely safe short of complete physical distancing and going virtual 100%.
That's Dr. Samer Sater, the Chief Medical Officer at Unity Point Health Methodist. For in-person gatherings with people who live outside your household, Sater says an outdoor, well-spaced celebration would be safest.
Outdoor has the huge advantage that the airflow and the air exchange is significantly higher than in any home, short of a specialized room. So you take advantage of outdoors anytime you can.
But with unpredictable Midwestern autumn weather, he says any such gathering is more likely than not to be shifted indoors. And that comes with higher risks, especially for the vulnerable.
That population is at high risk, and you may not want to take a risk today, in our area especially, because we are having higher number of COVID patients that are ending up in the hospital today.
Monica Hendrickson, administrator for the Peoria City County Health Department, recommends considering a virtual gathering with your extended family.
It's not going to look the same. And I want to reiterate, no one's telling you to cancel Thanksgiving or cancel celebrations. They're really important, especially around mental health and fatigue. We're just asking that it's going to look a little bit different this year. And that's the key.
Dr. Ted Bender, a psychologist and president of Unity Place, says that pandemic fatigue is real, and many people are yearning for the togetherness and normalcy the holidays may offer.
People are, including myself, are very tired of Zoom calls and Teams meetings and all of that.
But he says that's exactly the reason not to let up now.
It is so absolutely critical that we maintain our vigilance right now, because this is the most dangerous time of the year so far. And, you know, the holiday gatherings, as much as I hate to say it, they need to be minimized.
Bender says school-aged children can grasp why it's important to celebrate a little differently this year. He says he's explained to his own kids why their family will be having a virtual Thanksgiving.
I've told them Grandma and Grandpa won't be here this year, and I explained why. Because it's very dangerous for older people to get COVID-19, and they understand that the most important thing is to take care of Grandma and Grandpa.
If you do choose to travel, despite the risks, Monica Hendrickson from the Peoria Health Department says you should make sure you've had your flu shot, quarantine before your Thanksgiving get-together with your extended family, and get tested. The CDC also recommends wearing a mask, staying at least 6 feet apart from those who don't live with you at all times, washing your hands frequently, and using disposable plates and utensils. No matter how you decide to celebrate, Dr. Samer Sater of Unity Point Health Methodist says it's important to follow all the safety guidelines.
Help the community while we're having a high percentage of positive patients that are requiring hospital care, because that is our rate limiting factor.
And Hendrickson says it's also important to try to find a silver lining in this difficult situation.
This may be the year that I don't have to clean my house for the first time for Thanksgiving. So I'm taking the positive with it.
I'm Tim Shelley.
The CDC and Illinois Department of Public Health have more tips on how you can celebrate a safe Thanksgiving with your family next year. Find links to that information on our website. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.